Good evening. The president formally objects. Will Trump cooperate with his impeachment probe? IMF austerity brings thousands into the streets in Ecuador and eating babies, and the reemergence of Lyndon LaRouche. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Friday, October 4th, 2019. The impeachment investigation into President Donald Trump widened on Friday into a constitutional battle between the executive branch and Congress as Democrats prepared to subpoena White House officials and the president signaled his administration would not cooperate. Trump said he would formally object to the impeachment investigation even as he acknowledged the House Democrats have the votes to proceed. He said, "I really believe that they're going to pay a tremendous price at the polls." Trump's comments came shortly before Democrats sent an extensive request for documents to Vice President Mike Pence about his contacts with Ukraine. Lawmakers have made Trump's request that Ukraine investigate former Vice President Joe Biden the centerpiece of the probe. Late Thursday, House investigators released a cache of text messages that showed top U.S. diplomats encouraging Ukraine's newly elected president to conduct an investigation linked to Biden's family in return for granting a high-profile visit with Trump in Washington. Trump addressed the texts as he boarded his helicopter on the White House lawn.
The one text message that I saw was just about the last test, because I don't know. I don't even know most of these ambassadors. I didn't even know their names. But the text message that I saw from Ambassador Sondland, who's highly respected, was there's no quid pro quo. He said that. He said, by the way, it almost sounded like in general. He said, by the way, there's no quid pro quo, and there isn't. Now, for Biden, there would be, but listen to this. There is no pro quo. And that was the text message that I saw, and that nullified everything.
The texts were released following a 10-hour interview with one of the diplomats, Kurt Volker, who stepped down as special envoy to Ukraine after the impeachment inquiry had begun. And in international news, Ecuadorian authorities dispatched military vehicles to ferry civilian passengers Friday and arrested several transport union leaders in efforts to halt a strike that shut down taxi, bus, and other services in response to a sudden rise in fuel prices. President Lenin Moreno, who earlier declared a state of emergency over the strike, vowed Friday that he wouldn't back down on the decision to end costly fuel subsidies, which doubled the price of diesel overnight and sharply raised gasoline prices. He said the subsidy has been harmful to the national economy, costing billions over a number of years. Meanwhile, the streets of Quito were filled with people as the strike entered a second day. The government says about 350 people have been detained for blocking traffic, interrupting public services, or attacking police. Government Minister Maria Paulo Romo said that National Taxi Drivers leader Jorge Calderon had been detained for paralyzing a public service, while officials said two regional transport officials were also detained. Moreno declared a state of emergency on Thursday to confront the strike and scattered street clashes between protesters and police. Andre Arauz is a former Ecuadorian central bank official and PhD candidate at the National Autonomous University of Mexico.
2 days ago, the government announced this large austerity package and these pro-capital reforms. Civil society organizations had been criticizing his policies for more than a year now. But yesterday was the tipping point because of the hike in gas prices that went into effect immediately. So the transportation sector unanimously agreed to halt activities and hold a nationwide strike that led to a paralysis of the entire economy and the entire society. And the government suspended school attendance, which led also to students to join the protests. And yesterday there were large protests all over the country, a very repressive response from the government that issued a national emergency decree with what's called a state of exception that constitutionally suspends constitutional rights such as the freedom of assembly, freedom of transit, and freedom of information. That means that, in effect, in practice, we have censorship occurring right now within the Ecuadorian society, and also we have limitations as to meet and gather with similarly like-minded people. However, people were not afraid of this exception decree, this emergency decree, and have continued to protest. The protests are ongoing right now. Unfortunately, we have over 250 people that have been detained, already one dead, one deceased, and dozens injured in what constitutes the most repressive show of force perhaps in the last 20 years.
What do you see is happening in the end here? Where is this going?
This probably means that if the current Moreno government continues to enforce his austerity policies, it will have to be with more repression because the protests will not cease. The momentum is very large. It's very powerful. So that probably means that repression will continue for the next 2 weeks unless he decides to step down and roll back the measures. Now, if somehow he seems to negotiate or manage a way out of this situation, the next disbursement from the IMF will be 3 months from now. And the IMF has made it clear that they want the entire package to go through. So a next set of austerity measures will probably take place in a quarter, in 3 months from now. And that will be another, perhaps, tipping point in the situation in Ecuador.
Arau says the problems stem from the International Monetary Fund forcing the country to make drastic cuts in social programs.
We have an IMF reform package that was signed earlier this year. And the IMF package includes very hard, austere measures on Ecuador's population, as expected in an IMF package, even though the IMF sells itself as if it had been reformed. But the package is very orthodox. It includes hikes in the price of gasoline and also increase in taxes for the overall population. In general, what they call the consolidation, fiscal consolidation, or rather the reduction of public services available for the population. So this was expected to happen, and the IMF most recently pressured the government into applying these measures as soon as last week. If they didn't apply the measures, then they would withhold the disbursement for $250 million, so $250 million. And the government was pressured into issuing an executive decree with the austerity package that I mentioned. It also includes strong labor reforms that basically favor the employers at the expense of workers.
What led to this crisis?
Well, we call this a self-induced crisis. The Ecuadorian government, the current president, Lenin Moreno, was elected on a progressive platform, and then he betrayed that mandate and allied himself with the right, with the U.S. government and with the transnational oil corporations, including Chevron. And one of the implications of that new alliance was withdrawing financing options from the government by basically limiting tax revenue with a huge tax amnesty for transnational oil corporations, and also by avoiding or prohibiting central bank financing of the Ecuadorian government. So this led to a lack of sources and pushed him, he knew that that was the direction he was going to go, pushed him to an agreement with the International Monetary Fund.
Andre Arauz is former Ecuadorian central bank official and a PhD candidate at the National Autonomous University of Mexico. When Lenin Moreno became president of Ecuador, he soon withdrew citizenship status for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who had been seeking refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. UK police entered the embassy and arrested Assange, who was sentenced to a year in a British prison. The WikiLeaks founder is in an extradition battle. He faces numerous counts of espionage in the United States. And you're listening to the news on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York. We're in a fundraising marathon. Please give generously to support this station. And in the United States, Western governors are disappointed that the U.S. Department of Energy didn't consult their state's nuclear waste experts before releasing a five-year plan for a nuclear waste facility in New Mexico. The Western Governors Association, in a September 30th letter to the Energy Department, said the plan released in August for the waste isolation pilot plant could have benefited with contributions from the states concerning transportation and safety. The underground repository near Carlsbad, New Mexico, typically referred to as WIP, takes in plutonium-contaminated clothing, tools, and other material generated at 22 sites across the nation involved in Cold War-era nuclear research and bomb-making. Among those sites are the Idaho National Laboratory, Oak Ridge site in Tennessee, Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois, and the Hanford site in Washington State. The letter is addressed to Kirk Lochman, acting manager at the Energy Department's Carlsbad field office. Energy Department spokesperson Donovan Major and James Mason, who are both based at the office, didn't immediately return calls. The Western Governors Association in 1989 created a technical advisory board of nuclear waste and transportation experts that the governor said was left out of the latest Energy Department planning process. And the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing Friday on assault weapons used in a recent mass shooting. In recent mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. At one point, a pro-gun activist jumped out and claimed he would refuse to comply with any law that takes away his guns.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
The gentleman yields back.
We will not comply with any efforts by the Department of Justice. We will not comply with any efforts to demand or confiscate our legally owned property. Go to jail.
The protester was removed and the hearing continued, but Thursday night at the Queens Public Library, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, often referred to as AOC for short, had to face another protester who had more luck in getting their cause heard. A woman pretending to be pro-environment began demanding environmentalists eat the babies.
Okay. Great.
But we're not going to be here for much longer because of the climate crisis. We only have a few months left. I love that you support the Green Deal, but it's not getting rid of fossil fuel is not going to solve the problem fast enough. A Swedish professor saying, you know, we can eat dead people, but that's not fast enough. So I think your next campaign slogan has to be this: we got to start eating babies. We don't have enough time. There's too much CO2. All of you, you're pollutant. Too much CO2. We have to start now, please. You are so great. I'm so happy that you're really supporting the Green Deal, but it's not enough. You know, even if we would bomb Russia, we still have too many people, too much pollution. So we have to get rid of the babies. That's a big problem. Just stopping having babies is not enough. We need to eat the babies. And this is very serious. Please give a response.
Thank you. No, thank you. Thank you.
AOC seemed taken aback by the outburst. She later said she thought the woman might be having medical problems as the reason why the interruption went on for so long before the woman was removed. Soon afterwards, video of the disruption went viral and the meme "Eat Babies" began to climb on Twitter. But the Washington Post revealed on its cover that the disruptor was most likely a member of a group formed by a right-wing political agitator named Lyndon LaRouche. LaRouche, who was in prison for credit card fraud years ago, died earlier this year. His group has continued, and according to observers of the radical right, the organization has been on the upswing recently in support of President Donald Trump. Dennis King is the author of Lyndon LaRouche and the New American Fascism.
Know what she was dealing with. Well, I can't, you know, she thought that this was a crazy woman. Maybe on some level, she was actually right about that, because some of the members of that organization, some of them are very clever, sophisticated, and professional. Others really are kind of bonkers. But nevertheless, you can't blame AOC for not knowing anything about the LaRoucheans, because they've just been off the media's chart for so many years. And even when LaRouche even when LaRouche died, the New York Times did an article that really covered up for him, in my opinion. And there's a history of that.
King says at the heart of LaRouche politics is anti-Semitism, the meme that Jews control the world's economy. Their biggest bugaboo is financier George Soros.
He died earlier this year, but really his wife and other and leaders of the various national organizations, the national LaRouchean organizations, had been running the organization for some time, for several years before that. And it's a movement. It's on all continents except Antarctica. In some countries, they have access to people in high places. LaRouche, over the past 20 years, has built a following in Russia, where he is highly regarded by the media there and by some academics as being this, the guru of the century. So LaRouche is not, you can't say that he is the fringe figure of ridicule and contempt that he became in the United States. That's not true everywhere around the world. Dirty tricks is one of the things that they're into. They're also into making conspiracy reports, often very elaborate reports that are useful to politicians. I guess that is a variety of dirty tricks, but certainly public dirty tricks is something that they have long been known for, going back 30, even 40 years.
What kind of conspiracies?
They generally focus on the Jews using code language. You know, there is a Jewish conspiracy centered in the city of London, they say, but they call this conspiracy the British, and yet they've put out posters in which you have a picture of Queen Elizabeth with a Star of David underneath her. Just like the Star of David was used to attack Hillary Clinton in 2016 by Trump's people. Now, I'm not saying when the Trumps did it, you know, that this was the LaRoucheans behind it, but the LaRoucheans started using various types of code language that were then picked up by other people on the right. And for instance, all over the world, George Soros is looked on as the symbolic evil Jew. And his picture and references to him are used to whip up anti-Semitism. You can see that throughout Eastern Europe. You can see it in this country. You can see it various other places around the world. Australia, where the LaRouche movement has quite a presence. Various countries in Western Europe. Latin America, I think they've also put out literature there about Soros, or they did some years ago.
King says LaRouche was often underestimated, but that some members are sophisticated activists.
The whole thing about eating babies, immediately for people in the Christian right, they will think of abortion. Then you have the issue of linking baby eating with environmentalism. So there you have the Green New Deal and abortion go together, you know, under the rubric of baby-killing environmentalists. Then there was the issue of AOC being Hispanic. And I think that this is part of what the LaRoucheans are trying to convey, that AOC is part of this evil indigenous movement throughout Latin America that's plotting against Christianity, plotting against Western civilization, and plotting against the anti-abortion movement. Here you have the three main themes of the Trump campaign: stopping abortions, climate denial, and stopping the Green New Deal, which they present as being a socialist thing. And then you have the issue of fear of people from Central America, because they are these people from Central America are somehow, you know, they have this subhuman culture and they're dangerous to us. Those are those memes. Those are the memes of Donald Trump, but they're put together somewhat differently from the way he puts it together, so he can support them, but not, you know, but there's no sense that, oh, he's behind what they did. The whole thing is just, it's so absurd on one level, and it's so dangerous on another level, and that Donald Trump Jr. and his father would be picking up on this stuff and spreading it. It makes me wish, well, I stopped doing much with my website several years ago. It makes me think I better get back on the case. But it also makes me very, very annoyed about the leaders in the Jewish organization, and especially the Anti-Defamation League, who painted LaRouche as nothing but a kook, you know, who basically, oh, we can forget about him. He's just a kook. And everybody dropped the ball about him. And you can go now and see in Wikipedia, there's articles about him that was saturated with stuff that his followers had put in that give a totally false view of his organization.
LaRouche has been close to the GOP since at least the Reagan administration. LaRouche was said to have enjoyed full access to Reagan as an informal advisor. Despite hatred for Bush, Bush Sr. LaRouche continued attacking Democrats, in particular President Obama, who the group labeled a fascist.
I talked to somebody who was on the teams that were out there at those tables for 2 years, especially in the Northeast, and he said the people who were Democrats would call the newspapers and complain. But meanwhile, there were more conservative people who would stop and talk to us and show friendliness and give us money. So these tables, which they were having all over the country, probably had some kind of effect on helping push people to the right, because they were reaching people in communities where, you know, like the Democratic Party wasn't doing anything, and therefore people were sort of, they were open to the smears on Obama. And I think also it was a matter of covering up, you know, the fascist tendencies of people. If they could see, and the racist tendencies, because if they could see Obama being seen as a fascist, or even as a Nazi, then they can unleash their racism against him and say, oh, but he's a Nazi. And this is the type of psychological warfare that the LaRoucheans, as like Donald Trump, have excelled at, returning things into its opposite in sly, slick ways.
King says not to underestimate LaRouche supporters, because they might seem like a fringe group, but that's just part of their style.
You have a situation where the LaRoucheans are now coming back, and we can expect more dirty tricks from them in the course of the campaign year, and we'll see their tables out in lots of places, and we'll probably see, since you have a Republican Party that will believe in any conspiracy theory, we can see them coming out with new reports from time to time that appear to be well researched and put into attractive binders and with lots of charts and pictures and everything. They're very good at concocting this stuff, and you'll see that stuff finding its way to the Republican National Committee, finding its way to Rudy Giuliani, and finding its way to perhaps even into the White House.
Dennis King is author of Lyndon LaRouche and the New American Fascism. And finally, Microsoft said Friday that hackers linked to the Iranian government targeted a U.S. presidential campaign, as well as government officials, media targets, and prominent expatriate Iranians. Overall, the hackers attempted to penetrate 241 accounts, 4 successfully, though none of those penetrated was associated with presidential campaigns or current or past U.S. officials. That's according to Microsoft. A company spokeswoman declined to identify those targeted, citing customer privacy. Reuters and the New York Times reported that the attack targeted President Donald Trump's re-election campaign, but this could not be independently confirmed. A spokesperson for Trump's 2020 re-election campaign said there was no indication that any of our campaign infrastructure was targeted. Microsoft's announcement is the latest sign that foreign governments are looking for ways to potentially disrupt the 2020 presidential election. U.S. intelligence officials have sounded the alarm about the risk for months. And that's some of the news for Friday, October 4th, 2019. The news was engineered by Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.